The upcoming presentation is a two-man power trip of wrestling podcast production.
And now for something completely different.
Hey, I'm a Hall of Famer. I'm in three Halls of Fame. For the young fans, they don't give a damn. They just give a damn about themselves and what they're hearing now. And I got no problem with those rules. I know the rules going in. I'm happy to play the game that way.
And when Ivan came off with that knee drop from the top rope and he pinned me, I thought that something happened. I couldn't hear a thing. You could have heard the pin drop in that arena. It touched me so deeply that when I went in the dressing room, I really felt depressed.
I'll tell you that, I'll tell you right to his face. And with Hogan and I, if he wanted to get in a real street fight with me, trust me, he would lose. And he knew it.
You know, that's the other thing. They give you the belt, and they're like, okay, you're in charge of me. I was like, what?
When you mentioned a guy like Harley Race, that kind of legendary status, it's obvious why people would get upset.
Oh, as I'm concerned, Roddy Piper was not a wrestler. He wasn't even a good worker. If he had to go out and work his way to the top and not have good friends like Jim Barnett. I mean, I'm not saying he's not a good guy. He's just not a tough guy.
Bro, I swear to you, I don't have an ego. Like, I don't give a crap. That stuff is not important to me. People don't know me. They have no idea of who I am. They know of me as being a fictional character that they saw on TV.
People didn't understand that, you know, the guy they saw in the ring that happened to be using his real name and happened to actually be the president of the company, they really believed that that guy that they loved to hate was actually a pretty decent guy. And I think many people have the perception that I really was that character.
Welcome to the two-man power trip of wrestling. I'm your host, JP John Paz. With me today is the founder of Wrestling Inc., Mr. Raj Geary. Raj, welcome to the two-man power trip. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. I mean, we've talked a lot in the past, but this is our first time kind of meeting face-to-face on video.
Yes. Yeah. It's funny. We were saying before, it's like, I don't know how I hadn't had you on before, but I was like, I guess I didn't think you did interviews or I don't know what, but I should have had you on before. And easy for me to say, you're part of the two-man power trip. Finally. Thank you.
Oh, no, I've always liked your podcast. We'd always run stories from it. So yeah, thanks for having me on.
So what is going on in your world? I know no longer the owner, right? So you're kind of wearing other hats for Wrestling Inc.?
Right. Yeah. I sold the company last May. I'm still with the site. I mostly help out behind the scenes. And then I'm doing some other stuff, helping out with the podcast behind the scenes. They're trying to get this newsletter going and I'm helping out with that, curating that. So just a couple, you know, I don't have near the responsibility that I had before. I'm not doing any of the editorial side, which had used to take up so much of my time. So it's a nice, you know, stepping back and being still a part of the site and helping it grow, but also and not being involved in every aspect.
Probably should be a part of the editorial side, but I won't get into that, but I wish you were, but we won't get into that. But something happened recently, and I was like shocked by it. What is going on with Vince McMahon and the WWE just as far as recently? Now he no longer needs anybody else? Like, how did that happen, and what's going on with the SEC filing and stuff like that?
Well, the one, as we're recording today, basically, there were some bylaw amendments that were made earlier this month on January the 5th, and he repealed those, the latest SEC filing, they repealed those. And basically, one of the things with those amendments is now he no longer needs shareholder approval for actions related to the company. So exactly what that means, you know, again, it's Vince, but generally, he could do what he wants. And that's kind of been the case from the beginning. And I've kind of been saying that he has 81% voting power. He could maneuver his way wherever he wants to go. He's the majority, voting shareholder. So he can put himself back in charge of creative. He could turn down a great TV deal. He could face litigation. But ultimately, it's still his call. And he'll deal with the litigation. So that's kind of where we're at.
You know, that's kind of almost seems like, wow, is that overstepping or overreaching? Or I guess it's all legal, right? But it just seems like maybe he's got too much power, too much control.
I mean, I think that's why everything was set up that way from the get-go, is that ultimately he can never be forced out completely. You know, he last summer, June, he did, you know, resign from the board, but he was still on creative. Then a month later, he, you know, completely, he retired. but he was still majority, you know, the majority voting shareholder. So he was still with the company, just not on the board, or I'm sorry, he wasn't with the company technically, but he was still on, you know, the majority owner of the company.
It's funny, like the way it happens, like he's retired. Like, is he really retired? You know, what's really going on? Seems like he's been working on something, right? I mean, he's back in full control. They keep saying he's not a part of creative. And it's funny, Triple H keeps having these meetings. He has to like pound at everybody's head. But it's almost like if the guy is full control, he can kind of do whatever he wants, no?
Absolutely. And I think you're kind of seeing that happen. Again, it's speculation, but all the moves that you're seeing, you know, the day that Vince McMahon officially returned to the board, they said Stephanie's going to stay on, Nick's going to stay on, nothing's going to change. And then Stephanie's out a few days later. So you see, reading the tea leaves, you kind of just see Vince slowly and slowly kind of going back to where he was. But again, that's speculation. Right now, they're saying that's not the case, that Triple H is still in charge of creative, but Vince is now going back to the office. And apparently, it sounds like he is submitting some suggestions to Triple H, and he has final veto power, but right now.
Wow, man, it's just funny to think like, oh, Vince is gone, everybody's happy, Triple H, creative seems better, it seems, I know, just more cohesive, things seem to be headed in a good direction, and then all of a sudden Vince is just like, well, I'm back, I own this thing, and like, we're going to go this direction. It's kind of scary in a certain sense.
Yeah, and you know, everything seemed pretty rosy. Up, you know, even just a month ago before Vince came back, talent were happy. You know, there were in general, the locker room was a lot happier. I did not hear anyone say a negative thing about Stephanie. Triple H is open to other, you know, has been open to other ideas. The product had gotten better. They weren't repeating the same match week in and week out. And storyline started to have an arc, you know, even if you didn't like the storyline, like let's say Miz and Dexter Lumis, whether you liked it or you didn't. At least it did have, you know, different different twists and turns along the way. So, you know, you just saw more of an effort with storylines and characters and really sustaining pushes. With Vince, I think a lot of times you'd see someone gaining some steam and then all of a sudden they're just losing in a minute and a half and it's forgotten about. I mean, there's been so many times where you'd see that happen, and now you're seeing more of a sustained build for characters.
And it seemed like the titles, like the IC title and the US title, have way more prominence. Even those little hype videos before it, you know, gives it a lineage, gives it the history. Vince would never have done that.
I would argue that every title feels more important now than it did, you know, last July or last June. The women's tag team titles, you know, is getting some shine. And, you know, it's a building process, but at least they're trying. Like you said, the Intercontinental, the U.S., the world title, and a lot of that had to do with Vince, of course. But yep. It feels like a huge deal when Roman Reigns wrestles now. So, you know, I felt like creatively they were doing great. And I'm not saying they're not right now. It's only been a couple of weeks. Vince is still not in creative. But they were on a roll. The ratings were up or even year after year with Triple H at the helm. That's something that hasn't happened since they moved to 3 hours. When you look at the quarter ratings, you know, the fourth quarter was, I believe, even or up slightly from the year before. And things seem to be improving. And we'll see what happens. It's all speculation, really, right now.
Man, just imagine like your Triple H. It's almost like, do you watch a Succession on HBO?
Oh, I love that show. Yeah, that's constantly what I'm thinking of when I'm watching.
It's almost like he's Tom Wamstands or whatever. Like he's got Logan Roy over his back. That, like, every time I think about Triple H, and I think about that, I'm like, man, the guy, like, you think like, oh, I'm going to move in this positive direction. We got this like monster just, you know, on your back. It's like, I got to tell the staff everything is good. But then you look at, is it good, boss? You know what I mean? It's just Succession and WWE right now. It's almost like parallel. It's crazy. Like Shiv is definitely Stephanie, obviously.
Right.
Kendall is definitely Shane. Like, it's just so crazy with that show. Them even going private. Remember they were talking about going private at one point? on the show. Like even now Vince is going private. It's so crazy how that show is so much similar to the real life WWE right now.
Who is Roman in WWE?
Yeah, that's true.
That's the one character we're missing.
Yeah. Well, the ex-wife is obviously Linda, because who the heck knows where she is right now? Crazy. Right.
Yeah. You know, that and that show is more based on the Murdochs. Originally, that was the inspiration for the show. And but you just see so many parallels now with WWE that it's crazy.
Man, it's almost like scary sometimes. You're just like, all right, what story on in this show? Are they going to take from the McMahons or vice versa? It's like, holy crap.
They could literally take the last year, you know, verbatim and make the whole next season just based on what's happened in the last year and just, you know, switch it around to Logan Roy's company. But yeah, because Logan Roy, it ended with him taking control of the company at the end and the kids are, you know, kind of put to the wayside.
Do you think that Vince would do what his dad did and sell to the kids, or no, because they wouldn't have $6.6 billion. There's no way to do that. Like, do you think that's ever a chance? Because Senior obviously sold it to Junior. Is there any way Junior would do that, or is he too much, you know, of it into it for himself?
No, I don't see that ever happening. And again, like you mentioned, $6.6 billion is around their market cap right now. I think they're looking for more than that. The Hollywood Reporter even put the price at around $8.5 billion. There's no way that, you know, they would have to pull some gigantic investors. And I don't know if they have that kind of pull. And I don't think Vince would do it. I don't think I think he's gotten so in his own space and the family's out. And it just felt like over the years that he didn't trust his family to take over. And you see that right now. There's no one with the last name McMahon other than Vince that's with the company right now.
It's funny with that Pat McAfee interview. Remember, he goes, I'm kind of upset with my family. And he thought that was like a throwaway thing or he was joking. He apparently was serious.
No, yeah, he was serious. And you've seen it, you know, he stripped Triple H of so much of his power, years ago and with NXT and basically kind of undid everything that he had done.
Yeah.
And with Stephanie, when she stepped down, and that was a legit her decision move. It was a leave of absence. And then, you know, like a month later, there was an article in Business Insider where they're like, oh, it was Vince's idea and she wasn't doing a good job and kind of burying her. So
yeah, big time.
Yeah. So it's, you just get the feeling that he doesn't have the faith in his kids taking over. And that's obviously not something he said verbatim, but that's just what it appears like to me.
When you look at it, it's like, okay, if it is $8.5 billion, that's double UFC. You know what I mean? What their market valuation was. That's pretty crazy if you think about it, because everyone always thinks, oh, UFC is so much bigger than WWE. It's not, right? Because of the TV rights.
Well, now I think if UFC got sold, it would probably be, you know, and again, $8.5 billion, we don't know if it'll hit that. But UFC is so much bigger now, too. If you looked at their market, you know, the WWE's market cap when UFC sold, I think it was around $4 billion. So, you know, it's just grown a lot, and it's just a lot bigger company. And you have these companies still kind of throwing around big money for media acquisitions. Now it's starting to slow down, and that's where I think Vince is probably, you know, in the right. Like, he's probably right that this is the best time to sell, because if these large companies, like let's say NBCU, Peacock, Comcast, let's say all of a sudden they're like, okay, Peacock is not doing well. The streaming, you know, it's losing too much money. We need to cut back on expenses. Then, you know, they're kind of not going to be looking to spend $7 billion for WWE or $8 billion. Same thing as Disney. If they're like, we're losing too much on streaming, we need to cut back. Because you're seeing that right now with Warner Brothers Discovery. They're just, every article that you're seeing with that is not spending money on something. It's cutting costs, you know, cutting shows. What's that show, Snowpiercer? They just canceled that.
Yeah. It was like $22 million an episode or something. It was too much for them. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. They're looking to drop their music division. So it's just, everything is cuts, cuts, cuts. And that could easily happen with other companies as well. So it's probably best to get in while the money's still hot.
It is crazy if you look at it, though. Wasn't the Fox deal, didn't it just come out with Morgan Stanley, that it was actually not a good financial deal for Fox? But I guess it's almost like a lost leader kind of thing. It's like, you need the eyeballs, you need sports, quote unquote. Like, How does that work where Morgan Stanley is doing the evaluation and it's a big loss? I mean, is that something that Fox is going to look at and say, hey, we're not going to give you $2 billion again?
No, I mean, I think it's a loss leader from the beginning. I think all major sports in the U.S., I believe, are loss leaders. You know, you don't
wow, even football.
Yeah, yeah, they make the money, you know, like promoting the network in carriage fees, you know, so they'll sell. Fox will say, hey, we're number one in 1849. This is why we need more money from, you know, the Comcast or the DirecTVs. So, yeah, most and I should double check that. But the last time I saw is always like every major sport just doesn't recover the investment by their ad revenue. But it's so important to these networks, because if you remove sports from them, you know, what would Fox be without the NFL?
Nothing.
You know, yeah, exactly. USA Network, if they didn't have WWE, their average in prime time goes from like 650,000 viewers to like 450,000. So it's a huge drop. So these sports entities are so important to them. And that's why the Morgan Stanley thing predicted that SmackDown gets an increase from Fox.
Oh, wow. That was the end. Wow. I'm surprised. I would think that you would have to ask for less. No.
No, it was whether they get, you know, they basically had three scenarios. And the worst case scenario was basically doing better than what they're doing now. And then the best case was a big increase. So in their opinion, even in the worst case scenario, they're not going to get a worse deal than they currently have.
Wow. And if you think about like WB, as far as they're worth, let's just say $7 billion. Let's just say, what are the Yankees worth? What are the Cowboys worth? You know what I mean? And Real Madrid, like, what are they worth? They're probably worth $7 billion, right? I mean, crazy. WB's in that world of like the Yankees and the Cowboys and some of the soccer clubs. I mean, that's just nuts.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And you've got to think, if they're going to be spending this much for WWE, they're going to try to recoup their investments in other ways. So that could mean even more programming, which in my opinion, we don't need. But, you know, like just adding more shows and finding other ways to kind of recoup that investment earlier. But yeah, I mean, you know, I know so many people criticized Vince back in the day for going PG, but ultimately those moves led to stuff like this.
It's funny, like me and my buddy were a little arguing because he's a huge Cena guy and I'm not a Cena guy at all. But he goes, oh, but look, he led to, you know, the PG era led to the increase of like the TV deals and making more money this side. And, you know, obviously he's a huge merch seller and he's right. More of like a house show draw itself. But I was like, yeah, but if you look at TV ratings, Cena on top, spot, you know, down, straight down, you know, with mm-hmm. him, but, you know, and maybe even pay-per-views, they go bye-bye, you have the network. So it's like, I don't know, I can't be a Cena guy. But then it's like, but it led to the PG era, which then led to all this. So it's, I don't know, it's almost like 50-50 on him, almost like the crowd is, you know, when he comes out. So it's weird. Yeah. It's like, it's almost a good thing for Vince that he was able to do this, but obviously through the TV rights deals mostly.
Yeah, I think if you look at Hogan, Austin, Rock, and then Cena would be the first era where the popularity dropped quite a bit in his era. And the shows he was on did better than the shows he wasn't on. I'm not saying overall, it's not his fault that the product changed and everything, that it wasn't going to be as hot. He's just a face of it.
Yeah.
So he would be the first but then, you know, you see now when he comes back, it's a big deal. Like the rating they did on SmackDown, a few weeks ago was their highest in 2 years, and realistically longer than that. The one 2 years ago had an NFL lead in, but so that one really shouldn't count. So he's still a difference maker. He's a big star, but that era did lose a lot of popularity compared to, you know, what we had the years before. And it was going to, it just, wrestling had gotten so hot there in the late 90s that there was only one way to go.
I always think about like Hogan era, boom, literally gigantic boom. NWO hits another boom, and then Austin takes that boom and just like sends it to the, you know, to the moon, you know, sends it to the atmosphere. So it's like, wow, I can't believe Cena was like that, and it goes down, it's not as popular. But financially, like, how are they able to do that? Is that all Vince and these TV deals? Like, how does he make that work for him?
Oh, yes. I mean, it's all the TV deals now. I mean, the TV subsidizes wrestling. If AEW doesn't get a good TV deal on this next go around, it could be a bad thing for wrestling. And WWE, they just made so much and so much, because before it used to be pay-per-view buy rates and live attendance. And now all that is not near as important as the TV deals. I mean, you look at between Fox, NBCU, and Peacock, and I'm just rounding here, Fox and NBCU, that alone is $500 million a year. And then you add Peacock, that's another $200 million. So that's $700 million a year between those three entities. And they make $1 billion a year. So the vast majority is those TV deals.
When you look at the AEW side of things, are they going to get an increase or no?
Oh, gosh. I think a year ago I would have said I would definitely see that, you know. But this merger, the Warner Brothers Discovery merger, has just left so many unknowns. When you're seeing them in cost-cutting mode, are they going to spend more if they don't feel like they need to? I mean, if they feel like they could keep the product at the same price, why would they offer an increase or maybe a small increase? So AEW, what they really need is more bidders to drive the price up. And you look at the media landscape out there, it's mostly streaming, because right now Fox is still tied in with WWE. And so that eliminates, you know, FS1, all those stations. Yep. NBCU is tied in with WWE. And so when you look at the top channels, then it starts going down to like maybe Disney, which now owns FX. They had purchased FX and other Fox properties many years ago. It's just not that much out there that has shown in the past that they're trying to compete for wrestling or that have aired wrestling. And so it gets more iffy, but on the plus side, you do have Apple, you have Amazon Prime now, you know, in the space with live sports, with the NFL. So at least there are other opportunities, you know, coming up that where they might be able to get another bidder to drive up that price.
Speaking of bidders, who is going for WWE though? I mean, Saudi Arabia, obviously that story was out there. I know Cassidy and Steve, they got in a little bit of trouble with saying that they're both great. They both do good stuff. And I've seen them both break stories before that were 100% accurate. I know Cassidy broke the Punk story. I know he broke the Danielson story. So it's not like that came from nowhere. That definitely came from somebody said something somewhere and they, you know, they got a hold of that. So I think the Saudi Arabia thing is still out there, even though Bischoff has said definitely not, but I still think that's out there. Who else? Like NBC, Fox, Saudi Arabia. I mean, who can buy WWE?
Well, so Saudi Arabia, you know, it's, you know, the investment fund that they have, the public investment fund. If they purchased it, it would be, I don't see them being hands-on at all. I think it would, they would leave.
That would be great for Vince, right?
It would be great for Vince. Yeah. They could probably, they could easily put him back in charge creatively or whatever, have him, you know, be in charge of the company. But are TV networks going to be as willing to get in with WWE again with that, with the Saudi, you know, name looming? You know, Live Golf, I brought up this example. They haven't been able to get a TV deal. They're Saudi backed and they have some of the biggest names in golf and they haven't been able to get a TV deal. And there are areas that aren't airing PGA that could easily, you know, make a deal with Live Golf, but it hasn't happened yet. So will a Fox or an NBC be more trepidatious working with WWE if they're now owned by the Saudis, or make as big of an offer, or, you know, be as much in bed with them as they were before? So there is that with the Saudi option. With NBCU, it's almost a lateral move. You know, basically everything stays the same with Raw, NXT, Peacock. You just have SmackDown move from Fox to NBC, and it's almost exactly the same as what we're used to right now. So that one makes a ton of sense, because already, you know, like I mentioned earlier, between Peacock and between WWE Network on Peacock and Raw, they're paying close to $500 million already. They get SmackDown, that's $700 million at the current prices, you know, that they're, yeah, that they're paying. But with the increase, it's probably, you know, much higher. So you don't have to deal with increases anymore. If it was going to go up to 900 total for that package, now you don't have to deal with it. Gosh, I'm forgetting what's going on with Hulu next day rights, but you could have the next day rights on Peacock as well. Yeah, I mean, it makes the most sense to me for NBC, but you got Disney as well. Disney's very similar to NBCU in in the sense that they have the streaming service with ESPN Plus, so the network could move there. They own FX, so you could have Raw and NXT move there. You could have SmackDown on ABC. I don't know if they'd be willing to move 2020 off of Friday nights or move, you know, a SmackDown to another night. I think on Thursday nights, they beat pretty much everything that ABC airs in 18 to 49. So you could always move it to another night. So again, that's almost more of a lateral move just to ABC channels.
You think they
so those are the three that make the most sense that that seem to be the favorites.
You think if they go to Thursday, they compete for football? Do you think they would be wise to do that, or it doesn't matter?
I don't think it matters, especially because I think because football is on Amazon Prime, it still has done good ratings, really good ratings on Amazon Prime. But I think, you know, you look at what Raw does, and if they get the similar Raw numbers, I mean, if they get what SmackDown's getting on Friday night on a Thursday night, they're automatically winning the night, you know, automatically beating whatever's on ABC right now. But if they go up, and you would think that they would on Thursday nights, that they'd be even higher, and that, yes, NFL would bring it down a little bit in the fall, but probably not as much. And it's still, you know, something that would make the most sense for them.
To me, it's like, oh my God, if they sold to the Saudis and they go private, there's no litigation against him. This, you know, there's going to be no lawsuits against him. Do you think that weighs on his mind? Oh, like, oh, now I'm in like free reign. I don't have to answer to shareholders anymore.
I've got to think so. You know, like if WWE never went public, Vince would be in charge, right? You know, Vince would have been in charge 2 months ago. That whole scandal probably wouldn't have gotten out. And yeah, everything would have been hush hush. And I can see him being like, that's the way it should be now. You know, I forget this public nonsense.
That's another guy. Lester is like Johnny Ace. You know what I mean? With these allegations and these NDAs from Succession. It's like all these, all this like other stuff from the show. It's like, oh my God, even the NDA stuff is even in Succession. But it's almost right. Like, wow, that Saudi Arabia deal, when I first heard it, I was like, wow, it almost sounds like too good to be true. It could go private. He doesn't have to deal with shareholders. He's back in charge. It mm-hmm. almost sounds too good to be true. But I just wonder if that's really out there. Obviously, I mean, what do they have? $600 billion, whatever, in the investment funds. I mean, they could financially do it with the, you know, not even a bat of the eye. They could make that deal if they wanted to.
Oh, yeah. They can afford it. They can match probably any price that's offered. So, you know, I think, you know, ultimately, if they can't get a good TV deal, that's no longer WWE's problem. That's their problem. But I don't know. I just don't think... I can see it happening, but I think that's the worst of the options that are out there.
I know LIV Golf is kind of a startup, and obviously WWE has been around for over 40 years under the Vince era, of course, and even longer with his dad and his grandfather. But when you think about it, it's like, okay, they've got Nick Khan too. So, I mean, they've got the TV rights guru, so they could do that and retain Khan, obviously, and then have him make the deal, no?
I don't know if not, I mean, again, this is speculation, but I don't know if Khan would stay on after a sale. I think he takes the money and goes. That seemed like that was always kind of his purpose, was that if the company got sold, he helps
get the percentage.
Gets a percentage and then goes. I don't see him sticking around.
What about his relationship with The Rock? Is that have anything to do with anything as far as Rock getting capital together? I know the XFL is like nothing compared to like getting capital together to buy WWE, but does that mean anything to anybody or no?
I mean, the amount of money you're talking about is just so high that I just can't see it. Obviously, I could see if someone does have that kind of money, wanting The Rock involved, because having that face involved with it, someone that's, you know, really beloved out in the public, I could see it being worthwhile. But I just have not heard anything in that direction. The Rock was on CNBC earlier today. They were asking him about it. They didn't ask him if he was going to buy or be a part of a group that tries to buy. Obviously, he couldn't afford it, but I don't see it, but anything's possible. If he can, I mean, he would have those contacts where he could possibly put together, you know, some people with deep pockets.
On a lesser scale, I guess not so much the rumor end of things with The Rock, but with him in WrestleMania, is he in? Is he out? It feels like they announced Cody early because there's a bigger name coming at the Rumble, right? You get that kind of sense?
I mean, you know, obviously no one knows for sure, but we will in 2 weeks. I would think he would want to do it. You know, last match, LA, huge crowd. The only thing is he's going to be running a football league, you know, starting in a few weeks, you know, in February. And so, I mean, I cannot even imagine how much work that's going to be. And not to mention his other projects, is he just going to be simply too busy to be able to do it. If I were betting, I'd say he does it, but I could easily see just the combination of the XFL making it really tough to do.
What if he comes out with an XFL shirt? He's wearing a Defender shirt or something, and he starts promoting XFL and WWE, maybe.
Oh, he could. I mean, I would think that would be part of the deal, that he gets to plug it. He doesn't want to come off too shilly, because you remember, I always remember Shawn Michaels when he would come out and promote that movie he was in, something Gavin Stone or something like that.
Oh yeah, yes, yeah.
Fans just booed the hell out of him.
Yeah.
So you shill too hard, they're not going to do it. But
yeah, they're a little smarter. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. With The Rock, though, would be interesting. Obviously, him versus his cousin. Who's the real tribal chief? Who's the real head of the table? The Anoa'i family. You know what I mean? They were kind of like hinting, like, hey, all the members, you know, Samu and Rikishi, like, they're hinting, like, all the members are coming back. It's like forgetting the head cheese there. Obviously, besides Roman, you're forgetting about The Rock. So that could be really interesting of a storyline if you know, they were able to get The Rock.
Absolutely. I think this is one of those things where you could have 50 different booking ideas for the Rumble for how to use The Rock, or even, you know, Raw the 30th. And they're probably all going to work, you know, they're all.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, The Rock versus Roman, I mean, that's a dream match, you know. And if Austin comes back, I know they're talking about Cena versus Austin Theory. And I get that. I get wanting to build a young star, but Austin versus Cena just seems like such another epic once in a lifetime match, and you have those two matches on separate nights, and that just seems gigantic.
Definitely. And then even they're saying Cena Logan Paul is like, oh, but you got Austin there, you're gonna put him against Logan Paul? Wouldn't you rather like legend versus legend kind of thing?
Yeah same here. For Logan Paul, maybe someone like Seth Rollins, I think they could do something awesome. But yeah, I think with Cena, it's just too cool to you know, pass up.
I don't think Austin Theory is at that point yet either. You know what I mean? To face a legend, that's, I don't know, just not quite ready for that, in my estimation anyway. I don't know if he's ready for that spot.
Yeah, I mean, maybe if Cena's going to do more matches this year, maybe have him beat him at SummerSlam or something like that. But yeah, at a featured match at WrestleMania, I kind of agree.
With The Rock, have you heard this as well, that him and Triple H, obviously, their issues go back many years in front of each other, obviously, and in public, they're very cordial. But there's always that story of Triple H and Shawn Michaels try to get The Rock fired. Bret Hart mentioned it recently when he was interviewed and he was asked about it. He's like, yes, they bullied him and all this other stuff. Apparently, a lot of people say The Rock has never forgotten that, and that he wanted to directly deal with Vince to do creative. So if you have the biggest star of all time coming back and he won't deal with your head of creative, doesn't that kind of put Vince in an awesome spot of like, hey, pal, you know, you're dealing with me now, Rock. You know what I mean? Like, isn't that like the ultimate power play? Like, hey, you want this guy to main event WrestleMania? I'm back. Right. I mean, it if that's true, that's kind of a bad spot for Triple H to be in.
From all accounts, it seems like the Rock and Triple H's stuff is all water under the bridge. And I think even if you look at the two teases they've done for matches for The Rock over the years, one was Rock and Ronda Rousey against Triple H and Stephanie, and right, the other was just Rock and Triple H. So I think if he still held a grudge, he wouldn't want to do the matches with Triple H involved. And clearly those were the two he was willing to do, but you know, stuff happened with the schedule. So I don't think that's going to make a difference.
That would be terrible for Triple H. So imagine like you're trying to put the hammer down and say, I'm head of creative. It's like, oh yeah, by the way, you have to kind of move aside. That's almost like, I always talked to do a show with Kevin Sullivan. We always talk booking and stuff. And he said, literally sometimes Hogan would be like, here you go. He like moves it to the side. It's like, okay, here's what we're doing. I mean, that would be terrible for Triple H anyway, to kind of be put in that awkward spot.
Yeah. I've never heard of The Rock kind of pulling power plays like that in WWE. And this is going back to when he was the top guy. He would just lose all the time when he was the top guy.
Too much. Yeah.
Too much. Yeah. To where beating him should mean something. And you kind of got, like, I used to kind of get the feeling that there was a lot of Triple H's fingers on how much The Rock would lose back then. But, you never heard him putting his foot down and be like, no, I gotta win this one. Or, you know, that WrestleMania 2000, when he loses in the main event, when that should have kind of been his moment in a full, it was just like awful. And he went with it. So he just never seems like the kind of guy that pulls off the power play. You know, with Rock and Cena, he did want to win the first one so they could do the rematch and have the second, and turned out to be the best thing business-wise. So he was absolutely correct, but that's about it. And I think he refused to kiss Vince McMahon's ass in one of those kiss my ass segments on Raw. But those were the only times I really heard him putting his foot down.
Yeah, WrestleMania 16, WrestleMania 2000. Oh God, what an awful booking decision with The Rock, Triple H. Awful, but that is true. He did kind of, you know, he would always kind of his job to anybody. Big Show, Jericho, Triple H a million times. I mean, he would lose a lot.
He was the first major babyface to lose at WrestleMania. You know, up until that point, it was always the babyfaces winning at the end.
Yeah, true. The only one really would be Yokozuna over Bret, but then obviously Hogan beat Yoko to end it. So that changed things. And then 17, they kind of switched it when Austin turned heel. But again, Rock losing again. So,
But that one made sense. But
Rock
was going. But
what do you make of Austin though? Is he really coming back? I mean, I'm seeing Rumble rumors. Is any of this true?
I don't know about the Rumble, but, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire. And, you know, I think Dave first reported it last year and people just jumped on him like, oh, see, you were wrong. And then turned out to be right. He wrestled a match against Kevin Owens. So the fact that Austin hasn't come out shooting any of this stuff down and not even privately behind the scenes, it makes me think that there's a good chance that it's going to happen.
I don't know if you follow him on Instagram, but man, he is in awesome. Awesome shape. He looks like it's 1998 all over again. He's ripped up.
I think he looks more ripped than he did in 98. He looks, he looks yoked. Yeah. I don't think he's just doing it for fun.
Is that an indicator of anything like him wrestling a match, or that we take that as a grain of salt? We're not sure.
Yeah. I mean, this is speculation, but I'm taking that he wants to work a match and not be wearing a shirt this time.
Yeah, that's true. Definitely. For some reason, I was reading LA Knight name. I was like, I don't know if that quite has the pop to it. You know what I mean? Of like an Austin Cena or Austin against another big name. It's like, I like LA Knight. He could bump around for him and stuff, but I don't know if he's the guy.
I know, not yet. I mean, it depends what Austin wants to do. If he feels like he just needs to go in and squash somebody, I guess you could do it. I'm a big fan of LA Knight. I think he's one of the highlights on SmackDown right now. I don't want to see him become in that Elias role where he's just, bumping around for the top stars. So I think, just like I said, Austin versus Cena, if you don't do that, gosh, I don't know. I don't know who feels like that mega dream match with Austin. And maybe you don't have to do it. You know, you could do an Austin versus Seth Rollins or something like that. It doesn't have
to. That's not bad. Yeah. Yeah. Because you know he'll bump around like crazy. Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, it'll be a good match. He can probably deliver the best match for Austin of anyone on the roster. I think Roman could too, if they, you know, with using all the bells and whistles. But I think that would be, that would be something that'd be really great.
Yeah, we were kind of giving Cena credit before for a lot of the deals and stuff. Would you give Roman credit for being the first billion-dollar champion, or is that much more on the business side of things?
I think it's more on the business side, but he definitely, nowadays it's not so much about the individual wrestler as much as it is the brand. And when the brand's hot, everything's hot, because, you know, Raw ratings were up a lot before Monday Night Football started, and Roman was hardly on that show, so... But Roman should take a lot of credit. His match with Riddle was one of the highest rated of the year on SmackDown last year. So his matches mean a lot when he's wrestling. And I like the fact that he's not wrestling all the time on TV. It makes those matches mean a lot more. You know, we both grew up wrestling fans. You didn't see Hulk Hogan wrestling every week, or,
definitely not. Yeah.
And so those matches were special. And, That's I feel like that's how it should be with the world champion, with your really top, top stars.
That is true, because he'll come in, pop a rating, you know, you get very big interest with Cena coming in and pop a rating. It's the same thing with Reigns. Like, you're right, Hogan hardly wrestled on a TV show. I was looking, like, because I was always looking at Hogan matches, like, well, he randomly wrestled Dino Bravo on TV. Right. you know, but it would be like, that would be like 5 years after he wrestled Bob Orton on TV randomly. It was like very, right. And obviously, you know, he said nice main event stuff, but it's very rare that he's wrestling for title matches on TV and stuff. I think it makes the title and the champion more special.
Yeah, absolutely.
So who could Reigns lose to? Like, who's out there that he could lose the title to?
I mean, I think Cody for sure. If Cody comes back and he stays as over, and because, you know, he was still fresh when he got injured. So we don't know if this is a short-term thing with the fan response or if it's a legit, he's now one of the top stars in the company. And time will tell that, but if he is that over and remains that over, I think he's the guy. It's definitely not The Rock. Rock should not be beating Roman. But Cody, of all the guys right now, Cody, maybe Seth. But Cody's probably number one.
What would you think if I said, let's hold Reigns for the title for like another year, year and a half, whatever it is, maybe a year and a few months, and maybe like a guy like Bron Breakker, like give him like the ultimate push. Is that crazy? Or maybe he'll be ready at that point. Is that crazy to think like that far in advance, or Reigns saying it's not going to hold title for that long?
Look, I don't think you should beat Reigns just for the hell of it, you know, just because if everything seems to be working, there's no reason to beat him. What I would suggest, if Reigns was appearing on Raw and SmackDown both regularly, I think it, you know, that he should hold on to be the unified champion, have only one world title. But since that's not the case, I do think that one of the belts should go to Raw, because Raw just doesn't feel as important, you know, week in, week out as SmackDown does. So in that case, I would suggest Roman dropping one of those titles, and he doesn't need to get beat. It could be a triple threat or something where only the Raw title's on the line. Because now we're seeing the Usos, you know, they're defending only the Raw titles next week on Monday. And then they're going to defend the SmackDown tag titles on SmackDown. So you can do the same thing with Roman, where he's putting one of those belts on the line in a triple threat. He doesn't get pinned. Someone else does. And, you know, and so you take it off of him. And you still keep that that value in of singles Roman Reigns loss. Intact.
Yeah, you can't have him lose, right? I think the last time he lost was like 2019 to Baron Corbin, of all people. I mean, he hasn't lost in a long time. It's been quite a while. It's been a couple of years.
And I'm a big fan of, you know, wrestlers wins and losses mattering, and so I think that's great. And you look at AEW, look at how many times their top guys lose. Hardly at all. You know, Kenny Omega, once he became champion, he did lose that one time as champion to Christian Cage, and that was to get the Impact title off of him. But they don't have their world champions losing, and they're not doing title changes unnecessarily. So it's smart business to protect your champions and not have them losing for no reason.
It's crazy. Like 2022 was nuts with the Vince retirement, with the AEW stuff, with Brawl Out, Brawl In, whatever you want to call it, with Punk. And then 2023 was like even hotter. I mean, it just became somewhat crazier because of Vince and, you know, his injection back into the company. What do you think about Punk, though? Can he return in 2023 to AEW, or no? No chance.
It makes the most sense. I think it's the best for both of them. I just get the feeling that Punk has burned, he's burned too many bridges in WWE. But who knows, you know, again, it's the Triple H era for right now. But to me, it seems like the most sense would be Punk going back to AEW. I feel like they both benefit the most with that. I don't think Punk long-term means much to WWE. I think he definitely generate some interest. Look, imagine if you did Punk versus Austin at WrestleMania, that'd be gigantic.
Ooh, his dream match. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, that'd be huge. But I just think AEW needs him a lot more. You kind of see, like, you know, their ratings have dropped a little bit. Their pay-per-view numbers have dropped a little bit. So, you know, they could use him. He's a hard-headed guy, and I don't know if he's willing to make peace with Omega and the Bucks. And that's a huge thing. And if they're willing to make peace with him.
True. I saw him teasing MJF on Instagram. I saw him, I guess MJF put a piece of tape over the feud of the year. He put MJF versus MJF. He's like, yeah, too bad he can't tape up those ratings. You're not a great champion or whatever he was saying. So that, it's funny. Like, he's still cognizant of what's going on for sure.
Oh,
he's paying attention.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I feel like the money match, though, isn't Punk versus Adam Page. It isn't even Punk versus MJF in a rematch. I think the money match is Punk versus Omega. I think that's their big dream match, because that's like the guy for AEW, to me anyway. He's like the true and true guy versus like the ultimate like outsider guy who became the face of AEW, and have those two clash. Do you think that's the big money match, or am I wrong on that one?
100%. I think that's the biggest match they can do. And I've heard people say FTR and Punk in a trios versus the Bucks and Omega, and I think that's just a waste. That needs to be a singles match, Punk Omega. You could do the trios after that down the road, but Punk versus Omega, in my opinion, is the biggest match they can do.
Man, I imagine if they could agree, right? Imagine if they could agree to do it. It just seems like old guard versus new guard, and like just like megastar. That just seems to me like money. You would do the Adam Page match, but I feel like that's the match everybody would be gunning for, because who the hell ever in a million years thought you'd see Punk versus Omega?
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree. And, you know, the other matches we've seen, and, you know, they've done well. Punk versus MJF, you know, the buy rate on that pay-per-view was good. Same as Adam Page. Moxley, I thought that pay-per-view buy rate was a little disappointing. So, yeah, I think Omega, of the people right now, I think Omega is the biggest. MJF, they've kind of done that. I don't know. Punk coming back, his first feud is going to be big anyway, but I think Omega is the biggest for sure.
What do you think about Omega, the way he's in New Japan versus the way he is in AEW? Do you notice like a shift? It's weird. It's like he's booked so much stronger in New Japan. I think because he doesn't have, I know Callis did the commentary, but he doesn't have Callis with the mid ring side. No Nakazawa, no Elite, no, like him by himself with that jacket on, like the Terminator stuff, like the One Wing Angel stuff. He just seems like he's so much of a bigger deal in New Japan because AEW puts all this sideshow stuff around him, and he doesn't need that sideshow stuff.
Yeah, and I feel like the trio stuff has been a waste. And again, you look at the TV ratings, and you look at the quarters that the Elite are wrestling in a trios match, and it's nothing. You're never seeing a big increase in a quarter that usually, you know, stays even or drops. It's just been there. And I just think it's been a waste. I think Omega as a single star is where you're going to get the most value for your buck. Callis, I think, is fine as a heel manager. If Omega's a heel, I think as a babyface, you definitely don't need him. I think it hurts. But I agree with you. I think he should just be a singles guy, and he's most effective that way, most effectively used.
It's crazy. Like, the two big guys to me that they have are Omega and Danielson. Main event at two WrestleManias. He's a huge star. Everybody knows who he is. Those are the two guys they can't get right booking. It's like out of everybody, you got to get those two guys right. Those are your two big guys. I know they're trying to get Omega healthy. He is healthy now. Mm-hmm. He was injured, but it's like those are the two guys. Like, damn, like you got to get them right.
Yeah, and Danielson, you know, I'm sure a lot of, you know, he's been losing a lot. I don't think he's won a big pay-per-view match since, gosh, I'm even trying to think with Danielson.
Lost every big match.
Yeah. I think he might have beat Eddie Kingston, right? But we're going back well over a year. Like, I think the thing that's hurting Danielson and MJF, in my opinion, as far as feeling like a huge match, is because he has lost so much. And I don't think anyone sees Danielson beating MJF for the title. And I'm sure a lot of those losses were Danielson's idea, if not all of them.
I know. I always hear that he's got Mick Foley-itis, where he's like, I'll lose to that guy. I'll put over that guy. I'll put over Triple H again. I'll come out of retirement and lose to this guy. It's like, dude, you're Danielson. Like, you almost got to be like Hogan. Like, I'm not losing that guy, brother. You know what I mean?
Or Tony Khan should just be like, ah, you're Danielson. You shouldn't be losing to Daniel Garcia.
Right.
Maybe down the road, but we need to get Daniel Garcia to a higher place before he beats you. And there's still a lot to do with you at the top level. So, you're not losing tonight.
I forget who I was joking around with about it, but I said, I go, imagine if Danielson would have beat Paige for the title. None of that other nonsense would have happened because Punk would have been interacting with Paige. You know what I mean? You just gave Danielson the title while the ratings, he was still out, the ratings were decent. You never would have had all that trouble. Punk would have been feuding with somebody else on the, you know, on the main event scene, but Danielson would have been champion. You wouldn't have the interaction. Just went with Danielson all the way instead of Punk.
The whole weird thing with that whole Punk and Hangman thing, the situation, their heat, was weeks before their pay-per-view match was when Paige did this promo, right? Was it a week or two before?
Yep.
But they saw each other after that, you know. They worked the match at the pay-per-view. They were both on Dynamite, I believe, the following week. I think that was the week that Punk got injured, or maybe it was 2 weeks later. But they were at TV a few times, you know, from the time that Paige made those comments. And why didn't it come up on any of those episodes? So that was always, I don't know, kind of weird. Maybe while Punk was out, he just stewed and, you know, just got in his
head. That's one of those things I always wonder. I wonder if, like, somebody said something to him. Like, maybe when he got home, his wife's like, "Hey, you going to let him talk?" It's like, that was 2 weeks ago. Oh, I can't believe you let him get away. You know what I mean? Like, right. No, I'm not saying that happened, but it could be one of those things where somebody said something and then it just got in his head. It's like when somebody brings up, like, Russo to Flair and they say, like, "Oh, remember we buried you in the desert?" And he's like, "I hate that guy." You know what I mean? It just, like, brings up these emotions. You're just like, what? Yeah. And, you know, so maybe somebody brought something up and it stirred it back up and they were, like, trying to get Punk going.
Yeah. It that must be what it was, or Paige made some interview comment over the summer. I know there was some other stuff Paige said during the summer that Punk didn't like, so maybe that just triggered it. But yeah, it was odd. You know, if he didn't do that stage dive, it's weird how different AEW might have been last year, because that's where he injured his foot.
Yep, right on the guardrail. Imagine if that didn't happen, what could have been? Yeah. And the interesting, I don't really like Paige as, like, the top guy or, like, a main eventer. You know, he's over and he's a good wrestler, but I just don't see him in that spot. But I did hear that video is cut off. So Punk heard him say whatever he said about how he doesn't listen to the veterans. But I heard they cut that video off, that he kind of expounded upon it more. So Punk probably only heard the condensed version. Oh, I don't listen to anybody, blah, blah, blah. And Paige kept going. So I feel like, I don't know, somebody was out to get Paige a little bit there, you know, not giving him any sort of reprieve or anything, but it seemed like maybe some veterans might've been out to kind of make him look worse than what he originally stated.
Yeah, it could have been. Cause it definitely was odd that it wasn't brought up sooner.
Ooh, just a weird, that was just weird with them. But as we wind it down here, we'll head towards the finish. But just about you, I know, obviously, Wrestling Inc. What other, I know there's a couple other sites, right, that you were involved into and created?
Yeah, I had started this site called IndianDating.com back in the late 90s. And then also an MMA site called Fightline.com, which I believe we started that in 2005, 2006. And, happened to sell both of those sites the same year in 2010. So Wrestling Inc. had been my only baby after that.
Was that the most successful one, obviously, Wrestling Inc.?
It's between that and Indian Dating. Indian Dating, we hit 1 million members, you know, subscription-based. It was different. Wow. Wrestling Inc. had more traffic, for sure. You know, we did singles events all around the country with Indian Dating. They would all sell out. So they were both very successful in their own ways.
What made you want to start, like, Wrestling Inc., though? Like, just, you're just a big fan and you wanted to get into the space. Maybe it wasn't fulfilled enough, if you will, you know, back then?
Yeah. So I went to this engineering college out here in Colorado called the Colorado School of Mines. And this was 96, and I was a chemical engineering student. And I was just like, oh, God, I hate this. You know, I cannot see myself doing this the rest of my life. I have no interest in it. But I didn't have interest in anything else either. So I saw the internet coming up, and just one weekend, my then girlfriend, now wife, she was out of town. I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to go out party this weekend. I'm just going to, you know, learn this web development stuff. It's all the rage. So I got a site, got a free website at GeoCities, and I needed a topic. And I had just gotten back hard into wrestling because I had lost interest, you know, like 93 to 95, I'd kind of, kind of been losing interest, not as into it. There were all those terrible gimmicks during that time frame.
Yeah.
But with 96, when Nitro started getting hard, I got back into it. And yeah, the first day I had like 8 hits, and I was just like, oh my God, eight people that I don't know saw my stuff. And it just got addicted to it. And I just spent so much time on it, started contacting wrestlers to do interviews. And, you know, it was, and then it just grew and grew. In 1997, I got the WrestlingInc.com domain name. And the, yeah, the rest is history.
Is Wrestling Inc. the number one wrestling site?
With traffic, yeah, by far.
Wow, so look at that. From eight people to the number one. Wow, that's pretty damn good.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it does great, and it continues to do great.
When you first started, you didn't think you were going to be number one, right? This is just fun. You just love wrestling. There's nowhere we're going to be number one. Or did you think that?
No, this was just a way for me to learn web development so I could get a job in that space. So I never thought I'd be doing this full time, but I was hooked on it the whole time. So I never, once I did get an outside job doing web development, I still never thought about getting Wrestling Inc. or slowing down on it. So it's, you know, it's been there.
So NWO kind of brought you back, huh?
NWO, yeah, that Monday Night Wars, NWO, and then Austin, that whole storm. But yeah, definitely, like Nitro really started piquing my interest back in. And when Hogan turned heel, when Nash and Hall went, then Hogan turned heel. It was huge. It was like stuff you couldn't believe growing up as a Hulk Hogan fan. So it was awesome. It was an awesome time. 96 to 99 were just amazing.
That's why I always laugh when people are like, oh, the greatest time in wrestling is today. I'm like, maybe they weren't alive for the Hogan era or the NWO coming through. So it's like, not even close. Like, I was around for all that. I was like, today, no. I like today's wrestling. Don't get me wrong. But I was like, come on, NWO, Monday Night Wars, you can't beat it. And you had to have been there. You can't go back and watch and go, oh, it's not as good or it doesn't hold up. No, you had to have been there.
Same as late 80s. You had to have been there. But I loved the late 80s with Hogan and Andre and Savage. It was awesome.
Who's your favorite wrestler of all time?
Macho Man.
Ooh, Macho. That's a good one. Why Macho?
Macho Man, he's always one of those guys where you'll never meet someone and be like, hey, that guy reminds me of Randy Savage. He was so unique, so over the top. He wore this cape and this headband and then came out to the graduation song and had Elizabeth. I just, that whole package and his promos and his voice. I mean, it was just anytime he was on, I was watching. And I started off a huge Hulk Hogan fan. And at WrestleMania 5, I remember slowly, I'm like, I really don't want Hulk to win. I'm like, I really want Macho Man to win. And by the end, I was going for Macho, and he's been my guy ever since. I didn't like him as much in WCW when he came back with Gorgeous George and all that. But 87 to like 97, Macho Man's favorite of all time.
Awesome. And him and Savage, Hogan Savage, I mean, that's probably the biggest money-making feud. Obviously, if you put inflation, all that crap to it, but I'm saying it's probably the biggest money-making feud, which is insane because Hogan feud with Andre with 33 million people watching, but Hogan Savage is probably the best and probably the best storyline too.
Yeah, and especially considering Savage never beat him.
You keep the people's interest and this guy never beat Hogan. It's like that is nuts if you think about it.
I always thought if you had Savage win at WrestleMania 5, and granted, back then that wasn't in their mentality, you're not beating Hogan, but if you had Savage win and Hogan chasing, I think you could have kept that alive for a full year, you know. But they didn't go that way.
To me, too, I think this is a little bit of a Vince mistake. Savage, I know he's older, but he could have been the next Hogan, not Warrior. You know what I mean? If they would have kept that going, I always felt like, oh man, because in 88, when he's the champion for the year, the business was not flat, but it was good with Savage. Obviously Hogan's still there, but when Warrior's champ, you see the dive and see the dip. So it's like, obviously Savage is a bigger moneymaker than Warrior. He kind of went the wrong direction there. I don't know why you wouldn't go. I know he'd love Warrior. And obviously I love Warrior too. He's got charisma, but Savage is that was the guy to me, but I don't know. Vince kind of dropped the ball on it.
Yeah, and I think with Mania 5, you had Savage win, you had built-in feuds with Warrior and other, you know, of all the top baby faces, Jake Roberts and guys like that, and then you come back to Hogan, and I think Savage should have had more longevity as the guy than he did.
If you look at it, I know the Bret Hart does the Bret Hart scale, you know, the 10 out of 10, you do the charisma, you do the promos, you do the wrestling. If you really look at it, Savage is a 30. Hogan isn't. Flair probably a 30, but Savage and Flair might be the only two guys that are 30.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, that are tens in every category. Yeah, I agree 100%.
Because you got to knock Hogan just a little bit on the wrestling. He's not as good a wrestler as Flair and Savage. I would love Hogan, the biggest Hogan guy in the world, but he's a little bit less on the scale for sure. Savage is the perfect wrestler.
Yeah. In his peak, bar none, in my opinion.
So when you look at it, who's your favorite current wrestler?
I don't say current stuff just because I talk to a lot of them
are there certain guys on TV where like they pique your interest more than like, for me, Reigns obviously is the guy.
Yeah. I think Reigns, Brock, and AEW Punk did when he was on, I'd watch MJF right now when he's on, I'm watching. Again, I think if Omega gets back into a singles, he's definitely there. I just feel like as a trios, it's watered down. Those would be the ones, LA Knight right now. He's
killing it on the mic. Yeah, he's awesome. I think he's more interesting than Wyatt, which is surprising.
Right, yeah. And I think, by far, I think he's overshadowing it. I hope they don't squash him at Rumble. I hope, I don't even like to see him win. I know that's not happening, but I think LA Knight has just been killing it.
Yeah, that would be awesome. But Raj, before we let you go, tell us, you know, where we could find, obviously, Wrestling Inc. on social media and then yourself as well.
Absolutely. WrestlingInc.com. I mentioned, I'm still involved with the site. It's as big as ever. You can follow me on Twitter at TheRajGiri. And also me and a buddy of mine, Jack Farmer, who hosts the Wrestling Inc. podcast. We do some breaking news alerts on the Wrestling Inc. YouTube channel. So youtube.com/WrestlingInc. And then also, over the years, over the decades, I've been investing. And so we kind of do this, do these videos, just talk about some basic investment things that I've kind of stuck to over the years, and just really easy stuff. It's youtube.com/@practicalmoney. And check it out. Like and subscribe if you can. And I appreciate it.
Raj, thank you so much. That is great, though, with the money thing, because I saw you posting out there. I was like, man, this guy's making smart investments. He's got to let everybody else know how he's doing it, right? And that's great to go to the YouTube channel and find out.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think so much of it is just easy stuff that that doesn't really take much effort. And it's not financial advice. It's what works for me and what I've been doing. And I'm doing some putting my money where my mouth is on some of these videos. Check it out.
All right, Raj, thank you so much for all the time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron. And also check out the website, TMPTEmpire.com. And buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies, brother.